is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live from the heart of Manhattan, Rockefeller Center, New York City, Newsstand Studios. Joined as usual with John right behind me. How you doing, John?
Doing great, thanks.
Yeah, back from Belgium. Nice to have you. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Joe Hazen rocking the panels. What's up?
Hey, man. Thanks for flashing that mic.
Oh, yeah. Over there in Los Angeles, we have Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, yeah. We have some stuff to talk about because you apparently went to some sort of amazing concert. It might not be food related, but you know what. Upper left, we got Quinn. Quinn's back on the show, hopefully, you know, like all the time now. How you doing, Quinn?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm doing.
Oh, man. We do not have, unfortunately, Jackie Molecules because he's on his way back from Coachella, being the fancy music man that he is. But today's special guest on the show is David Kong, the founder of Glassvan, the very first, as far as I know, the very first direct-to-consumer DTC glassware company that is all... like hand-blown, which we'll get into in a minute. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, great. So this is the portion of the show where we just discuss kind of, you know, what's happened in the past week or so. Most of the time it's supposed to be food-related or and/or beverage-related, but it doesn't have to be. So anyone got anything from the past week?
Nothing.
Oh, come on, you jerk. So yeah. I know my man John was in Belgium, so what do you got?
I ate a lot of food. I've had French fries with every meal for the past week.
Did you go to that place? Because you were in Ghent, right? Did you go to that place that's run by that Michelin star restaurant?
I did, yes.
It's pretty good, right?
Place nearby. Yeah, no, it was good. I went there last time, too.
Is it still on point?
Yeah, still very good. Still very good.
Like, who's got the best? Yeah, he's got good mayonnaise. He's got a great mayonnaise game. I appreciate anyone with a good mayonnaise game. He's got a great mayonnaise game. And his potatoes are good. I don't remember which. Do you remember which potato he uses?
I don't. I was too busy shoveling them into my face.
Yeah, I've said this so many times on the air before, but any time I go by a place and say they have Belgian fries here, I like look in, and if they don't have that like counter with the kettle and the second counter up top, I'm like, you're an idiot.
It's a joke.
It's like you know, I'm a race car driver and they're on a moped. You're like, no, you're not. You know what I mean? No, you're not. You know what I'm saying? It's like they have developed God's way of doing that, and if you're going to do it, do it. If you're not going to do it, don't do it.
Yeah,
you know
agreed.
What I'm saying?
Agreed.
Same with the waffle irons. It's like,
oh, that was so good.
Oh my God! So you went also to Brussels.
You went
to Maison Dendo. Oh my God!
Yeah, to Brussels and Ghent,
oh my God! So let me ask you this. So for those of you that don't know. Dendoy, right? Maison Dendoy, right? So, like, there's two, right? There's the inside, which is mainly a Speckaloo game, right? Where you can get the giant. Has you ever bought one of those giant cookies?
My dad used to when we were kids, like around Christmas.
Did they ever get home in one piece? How do they package those?
Rarely.
Things? They're like 5 feet tall.
Yeah, they're big. We didn't get those huge ones, but we got other big ones. Yeah,
they're like an eighth of an inch or like. Thick and like feet tall, and they're crispy as hell. So I don't know how. It's not like a lavash or something. You just roll it up. I don't know how the heck anyone gets it home. They're delicious though.
Very good.
But the outdoor game, the outdoor with the Liège and the Brussels waffles,
so
money in the bank. And so did you? Of course you got both.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. It was great. Just with powdered sugar.
Yeah,
it was perfect.
You know how you know a place is good, David? But from waffles, if they're running with buckets of the batter and running with big trays of like the Liège balls, that's when you know it's going to be good because they don't even have time. They have to run stuff into it. That's how much they're pumping out of there.
Yeah.
Am I wrong about this?
Yeah, I don't know. It's great.
And you brought I asked before the show. David said Kong said he's not a huge fan of spicy mustard, but. John has brought, and I'm holding it up to the camera. If you're on Patreon, you can see on the camera. This is God's mustard. So
the best, yeah.
Yeah, this is like, you know, like this is the, look, there are different kinds of mustard. Like, right? So like, you know, maybe you like a sweet mustard. Maybe you like a grainy mustard. But for what this mustard is, it's the one.
Yeah.
The French are going to come after you for saying that.
That's fine. That's fine.
My can suck it. You know what I mean? I've been to their store and it's great and I like their stuff and you know the British stuff and Pommery and all that. It's all great. It's all fine. It's all got a long history. Blah blah blah. But like this is first of all, they just started shipping it after like 200 years. Like,
I don't even know if it's them officially.
Yeah, someone's buying it and shipping, which was the business idea you wanted to do.
Yeah.
It tastes a little bit. Here, that's yours.
This is mine.
Yeah. And Joe, you want a little bit?
I will, please.
Yeah. I'm going to go home. I'm going to buy a crap ton of liverwurst is what I'm going to do.
Nice.
but this stuff is itself, and it's not something else.
Yeah.
You know, like they say in the Deer Hunter movie, this isn't something else. This is this. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. My nostrils are cleared.
Oh, yeah. That's a great mustard. And did you get the old lady or did you get the son? She's not old.
Yeah, yeah. The son.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's a lot more mellow than the I'm assuming the mom. I'm assuming that's the mom.
He was pretty chill.
Yeah. Remember, folks, when you buy mustard from these people, they give it to you in a glass jar, but they put a plastic wrap over it for fear that metal will touch the mustard. This person lives in perpetual fear of people touching her mustard with metal.
Yep.
It's like her biggest fear. You know what I'm saying?
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
They even sell little wooden spoons at the store. That's how they want you to ladle it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I've said this before. There's only one horribly disappointing thing about Ghent, and it's horrible. Those little cone-shaped gummy candies.
Oh, I hate them too. Oh my God.
You know why you've forgotten them?
Cubardon.
They're awful.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It's no reason for them to exist.
They've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have less flavor than a poorly dried persimmon. They are the worst.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, I'm sorry you had to go to a funeral, but thank you so much for the grand size of mustard. And, you know, I think I might be eating dinner alone today, which means I will be eating all liverwurst. I'm gonna go get me some. Okay, question. For those that like pumpernickel, do you like American pumpernickel or do you like old school German dense as hell full corn pumpernickel or both for different reasons?
I'm not sure I've had the real stuff.
Oh, really? Oh, it's good.
It is good.
It's cooked for a long time. It goes dark because it's cooked at a low temperature for a long, long time. And so it like self-Maillards and goes brown. They don't put caramel color in the actual original stuff.
So it's like the German's original, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I mean, well, that whole area.
So, I mean, does it have the consistency of the pretzel bun?
No. It's like a brick. And you slice it like super thin. And like the grains are like just barely cracked and it just holds together.
Never had it then.
Sour because they fermented for a long time. Good. You like that style, right, John?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get any for yourself syrup de Liège while you were over there?
I absolutely did, yes.
Yeah, baby. Yeah. Like, I have to say, I know I'm a lover of I only went there once, but like of all the tiny countries, it is a tiny country that packs a lot of food. Can I
it
say
does.
That?
Yeah. No, it really is.
Yeah.
I had my first boulet liégeois, so that's a sauce base, or so it's a meatball dish. I think it was veal and pork cooked in a sauce that's heavily seasoned with the sirop de liège, so it's like a game sauce almost, like, you know, with the pears and the prunes and all that stuff, and it's just a lot of gravy, a lot of onions, juniper, served over French fries, and it was so freaking delicious. So good.
You missed this last week, John, but Kevin Jung from Noma was on, and yes, I stole all the Noma stuff that he brought, but I'll bring you some, and nice. Especially because of this mustard that you got. But Jack described, and Nastasia, you were there too, right? He described, what's the largest meatball that you think would be pleasant?
Baseball?
All right. That's big. That's still big. What do you think? What about you, David? You meatball?
It's like the carbone meatball is what I think.
How big are they?
They're pretty big.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's like that big. Yeah, it's probably a baseball. Yeah, maybe
a baseball or like a hand, like you had like a handball size in your hand. Yeah.
Tennis ball.
Yeah. So like, but how big were these ones? They were bigger than a softball, Jack said, right? Like big. Nastasia doesn't remember. She doesn't care. But I will say, Nastasia, since I know you went to an amazing concert, it's not food related. I know you just had like homemade chicken tendies before you went to the concert. But what concert did you go to that you think I should go to? This actually relates to you, David.
Well, I'm only going to talk about it if you actually go.
What the hell does that mean? First of all, we have to talk about it now. I would like to go, because but I don't know if I'm going to go. This is a radio show. Like,
yeah,
like
you talk,
it's not about me.
You talk about this band like every month, probably on the radio show.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah. True.
So, like, if you don't go, I'll be really like it's unfair that we have to listen to you talk about this band and they're going to be in New York.
Well, I'm trying to get you to talk about it, and you won't. You're just talking about the mechanics of talking about
it. I want you to commit to going.
All right.
So, I went to see a perfect Circle.
That's not the band that I would talk about, but yes. Who else is playing that day?
Please, I don't want to. And Primus opened for them.
Les Claypool. So two winemakers, right? Les Claypool from Claypool Vineyards and Maynard from, what's Maynard's tool-related winery called in Arizona? I don't know. Anyway.
I don't remember.
David, do you have them on your list? You got to get them on your list.
I got to get Arizona on my list.
Like, oh, you're not in Arizona? You shipped Arizona. No one.
We ship to every corner of the earth, but we don't have any. I don't think we have many clients in Arizona, like restaurant clients.
Yeah, but these guys, like, I bet you anything. First of all, like, he's a huge weirdo. Like, I'm sure he would just appreciate the idea that you could buy these, like, hand-blown glasses that would get shipped to him. Same with Claypool. You know what I mean? Like, I bet you both of them would enjoy the concept. No? What do you think, Stas?
Yeah, I think that they probably aren't approached by, like, really high-end people in general, you know.
Well, I mean, the thing about GlassVan is it's supposed to be like, well, let's just get into it. I still have some things I didn't talk about from cooking this week, but like, isn't your whole value proposition, right, is you don't have to spend infinity to get a hand blown glass. And if, correct me if I'm wrong, you started this because you did, you were kind of like gray market importing Zaltos.
I wasn't importing it. But I was using it.
Yeah. But weren't you selling them to like your friends?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
on the
sure.
Side?
Yes.
Yeah, you were like, you know, you were like, you're like, I'm the half price Zalto guy. You know what I mean? Like, so I mean,
well, it's because like to make the shipping work, you had to buy like 24 or something at a time, because it was being like FedExed over from the UK or France. And yes, I didn't need like 24 Zaltos, so I like offloaded half of them. Yeah. To someone else.
Going back to basses, I wanted to do that back when I was a bass player. There was a bass I really wanted, but I wanted to become a distributor, but I had to buy like 10 of them.
Yeah.
And I couldn't quite get 10 people to sign on to get that to bass so that I could become a quote-unquote guitar store. And then, you know what I mean? But anyway. So speaking of Zaltos, you know, I remember, hey, Stas, you remember this? At Sambar, when we started Booker and Dax, the bar, we had Libby's and they had Zaltos, just to show you what they thought about cocktails versus their wine program. You know what I mean? Oh, my God. Listen, they have not found the trash closet that they can't shove Nastassi and I in. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I mean, no offense to the Libby Corporation, right? They make a sturdy glass, but yeah, Zalto. And even that's relatively recent, right? When did the Zalto phenomenon happen?
I think the company was started in 2008.
Right.
And in the U.S., I would say it really started taking off in the mid-2010s, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's when
short history.
Yeah. So, like, people my age, like, it wasn't part of our, like, growing up lexicon, but, like, the people, like, you know, a generation or so younger than me, Zalto.
Well, I knew they had something because I had a box of Zaltos and I was going up an elevator and just some random person was like, oh, I love those glasses.
Man.
So I knew like you could build a nice brand selling glassware.
New York is a snobby place.
It is.
You know what
I
mean?
It's our number one city.
Yeah.
That's probably why.
I mean, like, I'm not saying, by the way, what I mean is that like, I appreciate good glassware. I appreciate good things. But it's like, you know, in New York, you could walk, any random person could be talking about, like, and it didn't used to be like this. In the 90s, you didn't have, like, you know, 20-year-old people walking around talking about, like, how many Michelin-starred restaurants they went to in general. And I could hear this crap on the street all the time. I just don't know. I mean, it's good, I guess, but it's just weird to me. What did I do did you cook anything this week, David? Or drink anything interesting?
Speaking of Belgium, I just bought 24 Cantillons.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Did you go to the brewery or?
Not this time around.
Enough.
Yes, yeah. Not enough. Never enough. But yes, no, it's good. It's, yeah. I love that country.
Oh, and I had this beer called Oval. It's like this Quebec beer.
Oh, yeah?
It's like a kind of like a Cantillon, but from Quebec. It was awesome. It was nuts. And I had it in Toronto, of all places.
Oh, really? I haven't been to Quebec or Montreal in 30 years.
Oh, yeah. You should go.
So I had no money at the time. We were just pounding Boreal at, do they still have that beer?
Yes, yeah. They do.
Yeah, yeah. Anywho, so I was cooking and I was using some of my, so Kevin, when he came, John, last mm-hmm. week, brought a, he brought me the pork scorer, the Danish pork scorer.
Okay.
But now he's like, you know, you don't want to just do it with like, you know, the same cuts that everyone uses. You want to find pork neck.
Right.
And I can't find pork neck.
It's like very fatty, right?
Yeah.
It's really nice.
But I can't find it. Who serves it? Like, or what? Like, I guess you can collar, but who bones it out? I can't find it at my local butcher stores. I got to find a place in New York City that sells boned out pork neck or collar so that I, because I want to use it on a fatty cut first. I don't want to do like loin or some crap.
Have you heard of this part called like secreto?
No.
It's, I think that's why it's called secreto, because like no one knows about it. And I don't know if it might be from the neck, but it's very fatty. It tastes really nice.
Well, you know, what?
Maybe we can talk through LaFrieda, because...
All right, get it in. By the way, I don't know if you know this, David, but John is a chef at a wine bar, so we discuss...
Temperance,
discuss,
right?
Yeah. We'll discuss wine glasses in a minute. So anyway, so Kevin handed us a... So I'm going to – the whole trick with the Danish pork is they score the skin and then they crisp it and then you can slice through the scores and it's
– nice.
And it renders out. It's beautiful. But he gave me a bunch of Nomer products, including Dashi RDX, Dashi RX, which is their like kind of like seasonal stuff. And so I made a whole bunch of mashed potatoes using my Guardian serviceware. So for those of you – I haven't talked about it in a while, but –
That's true.
I haven't talked about it in a while, John.
Yep.
I'm allowed.
Sure.
It was a company that made aluminum ware in Los Angeles from the 1920s to the, like, I guess they went out of business in the mid-50s. And it's all aluminum. Stuff that's before the war had an aluminum lid. And then during the war, they moved to a glass lid because, aluminum shortages. And they stayed with glass. So any post-war, World War II, any post-war like Guardian Service has like a glass lid on it. And the whole idea is they seal really well, and aluminum's an amazing conductor of heat. And so they were one of the people who were pushing waterless cooking. So waterless cooking was cooking, and it's a, you know, a, was a fad from started getting really popular in the early 1900s and stayed popular until about World War II. And, it's only cooked with the water that's in the product. You don't add water to it. So you put the potatoes into the vessel, put the lid on, you bring it up until you just get steam on the top of the lid, and then you turn it all the way down and let the potatoes cook through all the way. And then you rice them with – I use a Bamix I don't actually like the Bamix mixer. I think it's garbage. I hate it. But it's got a ricer that you can't get in America. You can only get it from European sources. And that's the best potato masher that God's ever made. You know what I mean? You ever use one of these? Do you know food mills? Do you know how much food mills suck? Do you hate food mills like I hate them?
Thinking about product line extensions for Glassfin at this point.
Yeah, right. So like food mills, everyone's like, oh, food mills, the way to make a mashed potato. Or pushing it through a Tammy if you're a real... If you really hate
like
yourself.
Jean Robuchon.
Yeah, oh my potato, God. Well, you know, he's dead, so he doesn't even do it anymore. You take the ricer and it's a powered food mill, basically, but you just push it down through it. And then I don't use butter, I use cream. What do you think about that, John?
Not both?
Nope, but cream.
No. I mean, do you? I think butter should be in there, but that's.
Why?
It's delicious.
Yeah, but I just add more cream. I want it to be like light. And then Dashi RDX.
Okay.
And some Yondu, even though they will not sponsor the show, those weasels.
Oh, that's too bad.
You know why? Our contact is gone. It's a delicious product, though.
It is a great product, yeah.
Anyway. Oh, by the way, before I go to... What else did I make? So I made mashed potatoes, and then I made a version of shrimp Clemenceau, which is the Dookie Chase dish. But, listen. Most shrimp that you buy... is freshwater farmed shrimp, which is relatively flavorless. It's fine. It's not a bad product. It's relatively flavorless. What do you call them? Écrevisse gris or whatever you call those little suckers?
Covid gris.
Gris.
They're so expensive. It's like 70 euros a kilo now for them peeled. It's crazy.
But the real Clemenceau is made with actual like wild-caught Gulf shrimp, which are good, right? But I mean, I don't have a source of that. So I made it with langoustine tails instead. And so, and here's how I did it. So also, like, the real Clemenceau has crispy potatoes, but instead of doing crispy potatoes, I served it on the mashed potatoes, right? So I made these mashed potatoes with the Guardian serviceware. Then I took mushrooms. I hit the mushrooms with wine and butter, and I steamed them down in the wine, butter, salt, pepper, garlic. And as soon as everything evaporated down and they were starting to sizzle up, I threw in, guess what? Pearl onions that were frozen. Thank nice, you, because yep. Now I'm an adult and I'm never going to touch a raw pearl onion, you know, a regular pearl onion again. Threw in the package of pearl onions, sweated those out. Once those started to color up a little bit, threw in the peas. And then warm the langoustine tails, chack, 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 you know, correct the seasoning on the mashed potatoes. Very good.
Yep.
Very good.
Sounds good.
Delicious. All right. So that was my week. That's the week. That's the book of the week in review. Do you know, Anastasia told me that at Primus they had a bartender on stage, and whenever they weren't playing, whoever wasn't playing went to the bar and just they were, but it was like a cater waiter. What the hell is that? It's like, you own wineries. Get a real bartender. Saz, am I wrong about this? Isn't that what you told me?
We don't know who the guy was. He could have been somebody that works on their vineyards, you know?
You said to me, like, he just looked like an average joker.
Yes, that is true. He looked average, but could have been like somebody that works with them.
So
you
tell me this, I say it, and now you backpedal and make me look like a bad guy.
I'm saying, like, because it wasn't like Mike Capofieri up there, you know, like, we don't know who was up there.
Okay.
He looked like an average guy.
All right.
But it wasn't a star tender.
Oh, do they still use that term? Star tender. Oh my God. I'm going to bring that back and then call everyone star tender. Yeah, so douchey. My wife's making me watch season 2 of The Bear. Yes, it's very good, but like the whole Yes Chef thing, we need to come up with something for bartenders. You know what I mean? So that people can like just scream at each other and like, you know, fake give each other props all the time at the bar. You know what I mean? Yes, Tendy. No, Tendy. You know what I mean? Heard, Tendy. Three daiquiris all day, Tendy. Wouldn't work. You know what I mean? Like, it just wouldn't work. All right. So.
Well, I think it would stress people out at the bar to hear that in front of your face the whole time, the whole night, you know?
You think? Probably.
Like, yeah.
I'd be entertained.
You'd like it?
I'd like it.
Yeah.
Three-day daiquiris melting in the window.
Three daiquiris all day, chef! Oh, you can't say chef. Had to say something else. You know what I mean? Like, like, you know what I mean? Heard. Like, everything has to be like, okay, whatever. What about you, Quinn? You got anything for us before we go into glasses?
We recently got what is known as like a cowboy grill. Well, the reason, you know, like a fire pit with a grill over it.
I freaking love cowboy grills.
And then
there's,
you know, some like armature that you can like swing different grills on and off.
Oh, yeah.
Or like hang a pot of beans or whatever.
Do you have a cast iron bean pot, my friend?
I mean, we cooked something on there, so we must have a compatible pot.
I mean, you need a cast iron camping, like a Dutch oven. You need one if you got a cowboy. Cowboy grill is God's cooking.
I think we do.
What fuel did you use?
Just some wood.
Yeah, baby. Do you have a lot of wood where you are?
I mean, my brothers went and bought them.
Oh, yeah.
I used wood on hand.
But I used unconscionable amounts of wood on my cowboy grill.
Would you get a cord of wood?
Yeah. Oh, Quinn or me? Back in the day.
Yeah.
I mean, back in the day, I had nothing but wood. We were on 17 acres trees were falling down left and right. I was like, I'll just burn anything. I would burn a whole house full of wood. It's like the way people used to write about stuff in the 1800s. They're like, cut down a tree, burn it. Make dinner. You know what I mean? It was like that kind of level of wood.
Cowboy grill. That's what we burn for the gods.
And I would heat it so much that eventually the grill just warped. I ended up not even end up, the grill like ended up being useless. I had to like have my own grills that I would put over it because it was so dang hot. So what'd you make on it, Quinn?
Well, we did that on Sunday. The previous Thursday, we got a fresh local halibut, fresh off the boat. So we butchered that. And so we did sort of a seafood feast, a sort of nondescript halibut head curry cooked over the fire, and then, you know, like a big, like a nice chunk of halibut.
Wait, hold on. Well, you just said nondescript. What? What do you mean? So you didn't like it? Like the curry?
My brother didn't like follow a particular style of curry. We were just like freestyling.
All right, but it had flavor. You're saying it wasn't a specific curry. It was some sort of curry like device, not like it was kind of like beige. It was the beige of curries.
Yeah, no, again, I just meant like it wasn't like specifically Thai curry or Indian inspired curry or Japanese curry. It was just like we have like all these aromatics and spices, and then my brother made a stew.
Okay. Stew and curry, huh? How? Wait. So, what kind of stew?
The curry. Oh.
This doesn't seem to be like you need the cowboy grill for this. It seems to be a separate problem, right? Unless you just want to cook it outside.
Well, no, I'm saying we cooked it over the fire because we had grilled halibut and the halibut head.
Mm. I know we've had this discussion before, but bouillabaisse or chupino, one has to die.
I think bouillabaisse.
Bouillabaisse dies or bouillabaisse stays?
Bouillabaisse dies.
Bouillabaisse dies. I think you're
right. Chupino's pretty good.
I think you're right. Chupino's delicious. Are you a fan of tomato-based fish stews, David?
It's not my cup of tea. But
no?
No.
I mean, I like a tomato-based fish stew quite a lot, and I'm going to have to say that, I think Chupino reigns supreme between that and the bouillabaisse. I'm sure my man Francophile behind
Obviously.
Me has to go bouillabaisse, but only when it's got real gounard in it. Mediterranean lover, freaking, oh yeah, sure you're not. Sure you're not. I've never, all the times I've been to San Francisco, I've never had a Chupino in San Francisco. I used to make it quite regularly. You got to have that garlic bread and the sausage.
Yeah. I will also say I just don't think I've had good Chupino yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hi. All right. So here's when... Oh, we have Mads Refflin's coming on? Wrestling?
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Oh, nice. All right. And I'm here to promote the Patreon. If you're listening live on the Patreon, first of all, we're going to talk about GlassFan right now. But even for David has been gracious, even for people who aren't Patreon, if you use my name, Dave Arnold, you get a discount code. But
David Arnold.
It's Dave Arnold. Come on, man. Dave Arnold. And then, but
that's what the email said.
Oh, geez, Louise. We'll make it Dave Arnold. It'll work. If you're on the Patreon, we have a different code and you get an even bigger discount. You want to tell them what they get for being on the Patreon, John?
Access to our Discord with a community of like-minded people talking about great things all the time, sharing restaurant recommendations. I'm going to throw up some new Belgian spots in there that were very tasty. Access to discount codes with people at Kitchen Arts and Letters and GlassFin and a lot of the other great people we work with. Access to the recordings before we release them to the general public. So yeah, just a whole bunch of great things at different membership levels. And check it out at patreon.com/cookingissues.
All right, so I was a little skeptical, when you said, we're gonna have you on the show. You guys shipped me some glasses, and I was like, okay, you're shipping fragile glasses in regular post, and I have to say, not one of them broke. And like great. Your packaging is, you must have breakage because it's life. But the packaging is pretty robust. The packaging looks like it's got to cost you a lot.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it's very fancy, packaging. Here's a question for you. When you get the glasses, right, they come in this package and you open it up. Inside the package is a magnetic strip. Why?
It's to glue the glass back together if it breaks. I'm joking.
Yeah, what's
it for? It's to seal the box after you've opened the seal in case you need to use the box again.
Oh, yeah. For people who live where they have space where they can keep a box.
Well, a lot of people use the box and take it to a restaurant so they can drink out of nice glassware at restaurants that don't have nice glassware.
I mean, if you came to my restaurant and used it, although, I'd be like, oh.
Yeah.
John, what would you do?
I would just be like, we're going to be in for a ride with this person.
I think this is how Kato found out about my glasses.
Was... Wait, someone brought glassware to Kato?
I think so, yeah. Before they moved, I think. Oh, I don't know. God. Someone, wow. I believe that's how he found out about me.
That, listen, like, okay, listen, there are plenty of people out there who need their own stuff in order to feel comfortable outside. And so let's give people the benefit of the doubt, John. You
sure.
know what I'm saying?
Well, it's because a lot of restaurants don't have good glassware. So, you know.
Right, but you're going to Kato and you're paying $8 billion for a tasting menu and you don't think their glasses are going to be nice enough?
It might not have been Kato then. He saw it somewhere and someone brought it. Maybe it was to a third restaurant or something. And, yeah.
So, okay, so you have two models, right? Like, not models of glasses, models of business, right? So you started with direct-to-customers, like regular jokers, but we also have a lot of professionals. I mean, look, whatever, I don't mean it. You know how I mean it. I mean it in the nicest possible way, right, John?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, regular, you know, folk, non-industry, you know what I mean?
Yes,
and then, but then you also branched out and you do to industry. So if your industry, you're buying obviously more than two at a time, and you have two different thicknesses of glass. So for those of you that don't know, these glasses are like super thin and they're handmade. So the average like normal person Riedel glasses, like the ones that I used to get for my house, are machine made. They're pretty decent, but they're machine made. Riedel also makes a very much more expensive handmade one. You know, and I mean, back in the day, they owned the entire market before Zalto, and that they of fancy weirdos like the Robert Parker kind of like wine crowd, and they're like, you know, buying all the different sizes of glassware, sizes and styles. And like, I went to see, I forget the older one's name. Was it Maximilian or the younger one was Maximilian? I forget. I saw old man Riedel, the one who's now dead, give a big tasting where, you know, he walked you through like all the stuff that I don't actually believe. Like, this glass aims the wine at this particular place on your tongue and therefore accentuates this particular flavor. Now, you do get different, obviously, presentations of aroma on different glasses and different, you know, ways it's structured. But I think, you know, a lot of what he was doing was just amazing salesmanship and kind of mental manipulation. But I did like the glasses, especially his fancy handmade. But you decided handmade glasses should be for everybody. So, like, why don't you say what the price of, like, one of your handmade APs is? What do you call the AP again? Do you just call it AP?
The Universal is our high-end one.
Right.
And we sell that for $2 for $80. And obviously you can put the 10% off code. Right. And then we also introduced the new glass, and it's $2 for $48. And we call that the all-purpose. Right. And that's our entry-level hand-blown wine glass.
And that's also the one that you more likely find at most restaurants, right? Because, like—
Right now, no, because we started with the Universal.
Right.
And so we've been doing that for, like, 4 years. And we just started with the all-purpose, like, last year.
Right.
Yeah.
So— And what's the percentage that you sell of each, you think? Like, are more people buying
right now? I would say the higher end is probably like 80% of our sales still. Because it's way earlier. Also, that's the one where, like, that put us on the map where there's real, like, differentiation where, like, you pick it up and you're like, wow, like, this is different than what I've used before.
They do feel good.
Yeah.
They feel ridiculous, like, They're like very thin.
Yeah. If it's the first time you've used a hand blown wine glass, like if you haven't used Alto before or our other competitors, like when you lift that glass, you're gonna be like, what on earth is this?
Yeah, I did break one, but it wasn't the glass's fault. So here's another interesting fact: you say don't hand wash it because that's how you're gonna break it.
Correct. Did you break it hand washing it?
No, I put it in a freezer. My freezers are drawer freezers, and so it had settled wrong, and so I can't stand anything in my freezer. Everything has to lay on its side, and so it laid on its side, but the base kicked up a little bit, and so when I opened the drawer, it caught the base and just boom, shattered the thing on one of the beer glasses. So I'm debating at the bar. So, you know, just whatever, full whatever, at Contra Bar, which is, you know, the bar that I'm starting with Jeremiah Stone and Fabian Van Hauske, you know, who knows when, mid-May, something like this. At Contra, they use, and at Wild Air, I think, right, they use your glasses.
Yes.
Yeah.
We designed the tasting glass. If you go on my website, you can see, you can buy the tasting glass. That was designed with them.
Yeah? Cool. Yeah. So, they're an early adopter.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And so we're hopefully going to use you know, some of these at the bar as well. And you do have a line of bar stuff. But anyway, so like I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do with carbonated drinks, because everybody with carbonated drinks puts it on ice. Back at Booker and Dax time, I used to put my drinks just in champagne flutes. Now, I'm not a champagne flute guy anymore because it's like a little too concentrated. So, but I was thinking more like an AP glass for carbonateds without ice. At existing conditions, we went to ice, but everyone now with ice uses Collins Spears. Collins Spears, relative pain in the butt, relatively expensive, and also you're still diluting in ice and having a Collins glass. You also make a Collins glass, but it's a relatively large volume Collins glass, so it would require
we can make a smaller one for you.
Okay. So the question is, can I go back to iceless service? And if we do, Jeremiah was like, we want to get a shorter stem, and that's why we're using the beer glass. Mm. Or is that what you call it, the beer glass?
It's called it the bistro, I believe, is the one you're talking about.
Yeah. But no, that's the one I shattered. Jeremiah.
We'll send you a new one.
All right, nice. Jeremiah took the other one up too, because he's going to use it upstate. So I'll say this, even though I know that you care mostly about drinking wine and these things, do you know what is really, really good? Drinking seltzer out of thin glass. Mm. Like, seltzer is the most refreshing thing in the world, in my opinion. Mm. And drinking seltzer out of the your stemless guy, super thin, I'm like, this is just even more refreshing, because it's like the glass isn't there. It's like you are delivering refreshment to your face.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It magically appears in your mouth.
Yeah. I have to say, it does take a little bit of getting used to having the glass be so light.
Right.
It's just like crazy. But they don't seem to break in normal things. I don't know. You have most people break them when they hand wash them, though, right? Also, they look uglier when you hand wash them.
Yes. Yeah, definitely just use a dishwasher for sure. It looks better and doesn't break as much.
Yeah.
Honestly, everything I think just tastes better in a thinner, lighter vessel of any kind. Like, I was using a ceramic vessel that was really thin, really light, and my tea tasted better and my coffee tasted better. I don't know why.
Are you going to do ceramics?
We're thinking about it. We're working
now,
on it.
Now, here's so before I go too much further, one thing that I will say, though, is that where the wine world and the bar world are different. So the glass that I care most about at the bar is the coupe, right? And Nick and Nora's and that whole variety. But the one thing is that when they're hand blown, they do have different volumes, glass to glass. And so I have to figure out some way to work with it, because I need all of the wash lines to be the same. So whereas at a wine bar, I can pour to a particular line on the glass, at a bar, I'm making the drink in a tin, and the recipe always has to stay the same. And it has to look the same in every glass that I pour it into, because I use it as a visual check to make sure that that the recipe was executed properly. And as a even more than that, if I send two glasses with similar drinks to, you know, a table, and they see the wash line, which is, you know, the place where the drink hits the glass, if the wash line is different, then people get completely bent out of shape. I mean, you know, rightfully so, right? It's the same way where, like, you know, whenever Nastassi and I go out, you know, when, like, we're doing something out and we go out to dinner and we get a tasting and her friend Pat is sitting next to us and the waiter likes Pat, so he gets a tall pour and I get a kid's pour in my glass. We're like, what the hell? You know what I mean, Stas? Remember that?
Yes.
I'm sitting there tapping the table. And Pat's getting like freaking goblets, and I don't even want a full goblet full of wine, because that's not even pleasant. Like, I'd rather have two smaller glasses of wine, to be honest, you know, money aside, right? I'd rather have two smaller glasses of wine. I'd rather have two smaller cocktails. It's more pleasant to hold a smaller cocktail, but don't give me a kid's pour. I'm not a small child. I might act like a small child, but I'm not a small child. You know what I mean?
Jonelle from Atomics is walking right by us.
Oh, yeah? I don't know.
He's one of our clients.
Oh, nice. Getting fishbowl. So anyways, So one of the issues I need to worry about with coupes is that, so how do you kind of control getting like accurate sizing on a hand-blown glass?
Yeah, so yeah, that's not going to be as good as a machine-made on that front.
Yeah, but so. it does look a lot better and feel really good. And it doesn't have as much of a thermal mass.
I think if your drink is going all the way up to the top, then I can see issues. For things that are like a little bit more in the middle,
it wouldn't matter. Yeah.
Innocuous, yeah.
Have you liquid nitrogened your glasses yet? I'll tell you what happens.
Not.
Yeah, we'll test it pretty soon. We'll let you know. I'm sure it'll be fine. The thinner a glass is, the better it actually is with liquid nitrogen.
Right.
Because there's less like crazy stress stuff that builds up.
Yeah, I mean, we're not inventing anything new. There's already a lot of hand-blown cocktail glasses out there. A lot of these top 50, world's 50 bars and whatever are using hand-blown cocktail glasses.
Yeah.
And we're just offering it at a much more affordable price point.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, well, I mean, much more affordable than that. I mean, it's more than like the garbage that I normally, like Libby's and whatnot. Oh, no offense. Libby's fine. Libby's fine. Listen, I serve plenty of drinks out of Libby's. It's fine. It's all good. I mean, the Libby Corporation definitely has a reason to exist. And I have Libby's too. I mean, like, I'm not being a jerk to Libby, am I?
No.
All right, it's fine.
Yeah.
I apologize.
I mean, we don't compete with them, obviously, because they're probably selling their cocktail glasses for like $2 a glass or something.
Yeah.
Our goal is just that every price point, we're the best glass.
See, that's it. Right. So you're getting twice the value for the price.
Exactly.
Yeah. So here's what I think is interesting is, do people have a tendency to overpour into your glasses? Those wine glasses with a really thin stem, if you pour it too high, you're like, Jesus. Oh my God.
Split. Yeah.
Has that ever happened? Does anyone pour it so high? Does it ever just go pachink? Is it ever like if you pour one of those tall glasses too tall, you know, on TV, like they go in and they pour like half a bottle of wine into their glass to symbolize, I'm in a bad mood. Right. You know what I mean? Like that's how they.
Yeah. Like the capacity of some of those glasses, like 750. You can put the whole bottle in if you want.
Yeah.
We actually had a client corner bar that like was making like, a margarita out of it. And they had like all the ice and stuff. And
what happened?
It was fine.
Really?
That stem actually, it's not that easy to break that stem.
Because Jeremiah won't let me put ice in one of those glasses with stems.
I wouldn't. The higher end glass isn't supposed to use, it's not supposed to have ice.
But the middle one?
The lower, the entry level one, you can put ice into it.
So the one with the thin glass, if you overpour it, it just, first of all, the stem is really tall, so the actual like throat, the actual lever arm of the wine in your hand is like immense, and you feel like you're doing something bad. You feel like you're doing something terrible if you overfill the glass. So you recommend actually only pouring up to the widest portion of the glass in general?
Not even the widest portion. Because even at the widest portion, like on our Burgundies or whatever, it's going to be like a lot of wine. So, you know, you just put whatever 5 ounces is.
You're a 5 ounce man?
Yeah, I'm less actually. I like to do like as little as possible, to be honest, like 2 or 3 ounces.
Really?
Yeah, I'd rather just come back and pour more in, but I don't want, you know, like if I work so hard to get the price, the weight of that glass down to like 100 grams, and then I don't want to ruin it with 150 grams of wine.
There you go. Okay, all right, fair.
I got a question in the Discord.
Oh, what's that?
From Josh Seberg.
I like Josh.
Yeah.
A hot dog is not a sandwich, however.
Yes. he's curious why you went with such wide-shaped coupes and Nicks and Noras. Was it for ease of blowing?
His Nick and Nora's not that wide, just a coupe.
Okay. He loves all the silhouettes.
It's not because of ease of blowing. It was just the design.
Gotcha.
Just
the
design choice.
But the Nick and Nora is wide for a Nick and Nora, but it's narrow for a coupe.
Got it. Yeah.
Right, wouldn't you say? Or no?
Our goal is just to have, you know, some in every size range. So for all the things that you need it for, like we don't have a middle one but because we haven't made it yet, but we're going to make something.
Right. The one that I think we're calling a Nick and Nora that I have though has the volume of a regular like coupe. I think it can hold a full 5.5 ounces, and the coupe is big, right?
Yeah.
Like, do you make an actual like more like closer to like 4 ounce Nick and Nora?
We can make anything. What you see on the website is what we have right now, but we can theoretically make anything.
So, like, if when you say that, like, if I'm a restaurant and I want a glass a particular shape, like, how much time and money am I talking? How many do I need?
Well, if you're suggesting something that other people are going to be interested in, then we'll just develop it and add it to our line.
Right.
And you'll be our first customer. Oh. You know what I mean?
Well, so how long does it take? Like, because they got to make the mold. All your stuff's in wooden molds,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we're very fast. No, they're actually not wood. They're like metal.
Oh, they're metal, the molds? Yeah. And then they're like spinning it in the mold by hand? Yeah. All right. So how long, like, I have an idea. I'm going to open a restaurant.
We're trying to do something like Company Vancer and Natural. Like, they came to me like probably 4 months ago. They're opening this month. So,
and it's going to be
custom.
Good?
Completely custom. Well, we'll see if you can be the judge of that when you go.
So, like, but if I want to make something that you hate, how much more does it cost? Like, how many do I need to make?
Then it's just going to be expensive. You probably wouldn't be able to do it as a restaurant. Unless you're like a big restaurant group or something.
Right. But like, what is it? Like 100 glasses? Like 1,000 glasses?
Like more than 100.
More than 100?
Yeah, a couple hundred probably. And then each glass would be expensive.
Right.
Because that's, you know, that's not at a mass-produced level.
Right. How many molds do they need for each shape? Like, when you're going to make a shape, how many molds do you need to make? Just one?
Yeah, it's just for the bowl.
Right, but I mean, in other words, like, you don't have, like, five different people doing it at the same time. You don't need five copies of it.
There might be more than one mold, yeah, for that reason.
Yeah. So here's the other thing that I find interesting is that most people, like, we had the Maiden folks, you know, on before, and most people who go into these kinds of businesses come from these businesses.
Right.
Right, because they have the contacts, and like Nastasia and I and John bitterly know how hard it is to get factories sometimes to talk to you unless you like known them for forever.
Right.
But you came at this because you're like, I like wine glasses and they cost too much, and I'm a business person, so I'm going to do this. How the hell did that work? Like, how the hell did you get people to even talk to you? Because I think people might be interested. This is not a standard model. Like, to go into this kind of business not being from it is not standard.
The good thing is I'm the one paying them money. So
it hasn't worked for us though.
So that's somewhat helpful. Obviously, the harder thing was to get like the clients, you know, because I am not from the business, so it was hard to like, you know, get like our first press was Ray Isle, and that was like, you know, like 2 years after, because I didn't have any press contacts, you know, and restaurants, it took a while, you know, but once it started going, it started going.
But like, so how many different factories, how helpful is it to have different factories so that you can play one against the other? Like, probably pretty helpful, right? Or is it just because you need more production?
We don't play factories against each other. It's just, no, seriously, we don't. I'm just like, that's not what I want to do. I just want to be happy, and I don't want to make people mad, and I don't want people mad at me, you know. But we do have many factories because things happen.
Right.
You know? So if one factory, you know, and this is like hand-blown wine glasses, like things happen, like the furnace shuts down or whatever. So you need some options.
And do you find that most of the different factories can produce to the same spec?
We only use the top factories that can do this. Yeah.
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 So like, how many are there? Like in
we
like,
use all of them.
But like, I don't even know how big.
It'd be a handful.
Really? Yeah.
We use all of them.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I mean, like, the problem for us is that, you know, we have only one factory, and because we only have one factory, they can pretty much put us over a barrel and tell us to do whatever we, you know, they want us to do. And it's hard to move back and forth because there's a lot of development and all this other stuff. I'm assuming that in your world, it's like in my world, and that you own the molds. They don't, right? Or do they own the molds?
They own the molds.
Oh, yeah. So it's slightly different from like in the products world where we are. You pay for all of the molds for like the injection molding stuff, and we own them. So technically, if I wanted to, I could be like, hand me those molds, I'm going to another factory. You know what I mean? But like,
well, yeah, I mean, it's easy to get another factory to make the same molds. It's not an issue.
Yeah. So you want to go through the procedure how one of these suckers is made or no? People might not know.
Sure.
You ever learn to blow glass yourself? No.
It looks way too complicated.
You never wanted to like just go to Urban Glass and try it out?
Maybe
it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
You can go and you can just pay them and like they don't expect that you're going to ever be good at it, but they teach you how to do it.
Wow.
And it's fun.
I feel like what they do there must be quite a bit different than, I mean, maybe it's similar, but I mean, like I just can't imagine being able to blow my own glass. Like that just seems so hard.
Well, they're not making what you
right.
do. I mean, I think most of the stuff there is like glass artisans. They right. do a lot of lamp work and stuff right. like that. They have probably some people, you know, doing that. You know, they teach you to blow like little vases and stuff like this. You know what wow. I mean? So. But you should definitely do it for fun because it's right here in the city.
Okay.
Urban Glass. And there's another one, not just Urban Glass. There's a second one. I don't know, but it's just, I don't know. It might be fun. Maybe not. Maybe because it's your business, you wouldn't think it's fun. Maybe it's like if someone says, hey, do you want to go do this cooking thing? I'm like, no.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. So what's the procedure? How does it work?
Yes. So you can also go on our website and it's all shown there. But yeah, so there's a mold and then someone blows the glass and it covers the mold and there's some chemistry about the mold and like how that contacts the glass and stuff like that. And then there's a piece at the end of the glass that you stretch to become the stem and then you attach a piece for the base and then that base is rolled into like a pancake kind of thing. And then it's slowly cooled so that it gets more durable. And then it's cut, the rim is cut, and then it's polished, and then, yeah, and then it's done. So
how many people, in other words, like from a factory standpoint, is it, am I making an entire glass, or am I blowing the bowl and handing it to the stem person?
You're doing one part of it.
You're doing one part. Okay, so how long does it take to make each glass?
Each glass probably takes 30 seconds.
What?
Wow. Yeah.
What?
But there's, like you said, there's 10 people doing it. So you're blowing, giving this guy.
So my operation takes 30 seconds. But
No. Like the whole thing probably takes 30 seconds, but everyone's really fast because like they're just doing that one thing.
So how long do they need to train? How long do they need to train to do this?
It's a long time. Yeah.
And you have your job, right? Because you're like,
yeah,
I'm the STEM person or whatever.
Exactly. So if one person is sick, then, you know. Then you make a different glass.
Yeah, because like you know, the person who's like, I'm the bowl person. I ain't doing the stems like that kind of situation.
Yeah, like our stuff is the most complicated and highest end that a factory will do. So like everything has the stars have to align to make our glass. But if one person's sick, they can make one of the other glasses.
Huh. And how does it? Are you then sending your packages to the factory? Because your packages are also their own engineered Megillah.
Yeah.
So then they're doing it, and then it, like, goes out direct? Or to a warehouse, wherever, but they pack it into your stuff there. You're not taking delivery of...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It goes right into the packaging, and then it's shipped on boats and stuff.
What percentage of glasses do they mess up? Do you know, like, when they're making it? Like, what kind of, like...
Oh, it's high.
Yeah, I bet.
Because there's like you know, like the every hand-blown glass is different. So there's a certain amount of difference that we allow. And if it goes above that, then it's.
Do they take it home? Do you think all of these folks have like really nice glasses at home?
I don't think they drink very much wine where we make the glasses.
No, I mean, but I'm telling you, Seltzer is really good out of these things. You know?
Right.
I'm telling you, like I served it to my wife the other day. I'm like, here. How much better does that seltzer taste? She was like,
if you want, we can make a seltzer glass together.
Really? I would love that.
Dave Arnold seltzer glass.
You know, like one of the tricks I like is, and I forget where I learned this from. Who was it? Dead Rabbit? Somebody, maybe. I don't remember. Two different glasses, right? So you have a still water glass and a sparkling water glass, not because they technically need to be different. But
yes, for the servers.
For the servers.
Yeah.
So they know what you have, right? And usually you want people to drink the seltzer in smaller pieces faster so it doesn't go flat. So the tall glass is the still glass and the short glass is the seltzer glass. And also, most people can't drink as much seltzer as I can.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Like I can drink a lot of seltzer very quickly. It does not bother me. Bubbles don't bother. It actually disturbs Nastasia watching me drink seltzer. She's like, the way that man drinks seltzer. But not as much as when I was spewing you with bird guts at Hicks, right? That was the worst? Was that the worst meal you've ever had with me?
Or when you were eating the meal at Giro, like, with an unhinged jaw, like...
Oh, were they telling you to be, like, quieter, or...
No. I was just, I was eating too fast, our other guest had to run out because his butt was set on spray because he was sick. Anyway, but not because of Giro. War Turtle writes in, I work in wine over the years have downgraded, in quotes, the glasses I offer for wine parties I host. One friend is notorious for breaking a glass at everyone's home. Flailing, he has flailing arm syndrome, or they have flailing arm syndrome. I've recently started using higher quality plastic stem glasses, and no one seems to mind. Is there a wine glass etiquette for a certain caliber of wine? By the way, there is no solution for, like, hot tub places and pools. Does Grand Cru Burgundy Riesling Champagne have to be poured in a glass van, Zalto, Gabriel Glass, Specialty Glassware, etc.? Or can I get away with some cheapo schmeepo plastic stems? I know what you're going to say, but you can respond. Also, hello from a fellow wine berserker, which...
Yes, that's where we started.
Yeah, it's been great to see your business grow. So they appreciate, but they want to, you know, they don't like these things getting broken by their chode friends.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, yes, I'm biased, but you can drink anything out of a glass bin. You don't need to get any other brand. Yeah.
But what are your thoughts? Like, when someone hands, like, could someone make theoretically a plastic glass that is decent to drink out of?
I'd love to see it. We'll offer it if it's pleasant, but I don't think it's likely.
Yeah. Now, the problem with breaking glasses is not only that it is broken and you have lost the money, but that it also puts glass everywhere. I wonder if anyone has made, like, a situation where you could put, like, a light coating on the outside of the glass so that when it breaks, it's not putting glass everywhere. I mean, like, my main fear of broken glass is broken glass.
Right.
Not the money.
Especially in a restaurant setting, that seems, like, pretty annoying.
Yeah. Oh, it sucks. Sucks.
Typically, when our glasses break, it's the stem, so it's not going everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, for any sort of person who's had to work that kind of service before, the sound of broken glass, like, even when you're at a party, it's like, it's, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but, like our glasses also have, like, it's not like the really high pitch. It's kind of a lower pitch. And it's just the way that our glasses...
Oh, do you do that thing where you take your glasses and go ding?
Yeah, it's more of like a bong kind of a...
How much do you hate a seam in a glass when you see a seam in a glass?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. That's how you tell when it's a really
seam
bad glass.
Oh, man. The seams.
Yeah.
JPM writes in, by the way, in 50 seconds, the music will start playing, but don't worry. We have 2 minutes.
Okay.
When Cato reopened in the Row, which is, I guess, is that what they call that area of L.A., Stas, the Row?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
I mean, it's not row-shaped. It's like a bunch of warehouses. You can barely figure out how to get in there because, like, you have to penetrate in with your car, and then whatever. Remember when you rented that giant Jeep and we couldn't get in and out of it? We looked like idiots getting in and out of our car?
Yeah.
Yeah, we looked like that idiot that buys a Lamborghini but doesn't know how to use a clutch. When Cato reopened in the Row, we were enamored with the glassware, and Ryan spoke so highly of David, and what he was doing with the company that we ordered a set of universals as soon as we got home. After 2 to 3 years, we still use them weekly, and they are in great shape. Thank you. This may seem like a very 101 question, but what are the telltale signs of quality in glassware? Right now, I am at the I think I know when I see it and feel it, but are there specific attributes that show craftsmanship and quality?
Well, you mentioned one where if there's a seam, then that's a no-go. There's actually some pretty nice, like, machine-made glasses now that don't have a seam, and they're actually just made the same way that a hand-blown wine glass is made. It's just they've replaced the humans on every part of the process. But yeah, no, I think really, like, the thing that makes the biggest difference is how light and how thin the glass is.
It is crazy.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like, surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a question for you. So I noticed on some of the glasses you have the stem, especially on the ones that are, like, meant to be, like, all-purpose, whether I think I have the universals, but, like, they have a very wide base such that when you're putting them together, they don't crack the bowls together. The bases touch before the bowls do. Is that on purpose, or am I just lucky?
We make the base bigger, but not for that reason. It's to give a better counterweight to when the wine is there.
It also prevents you from smacking the bowls together and means that when you shut the cabinet on it, it touches the base before it touches the bowl.
Got it.
Which makes me feel better. Can you upside down hang those things, or is it too fragile? Really?
Absolutely, yeah.
You make me nervous
with
it.
That's not how these things break. They break because someone threw them on the ground or because you were hand washing them and you snapped the stem.
Because you're pushing too hard when you go in?
Yeah, exactly.
What about...
Or you're twisting. You can't twist.
What about dishwashers at commercial dishwashers?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have like 200 restaurants that use us.
Yeah, so well, you're in some stupid number of Michelin star restaurants, yeah. Right? Some crazy percentage of the newer Michelin star restaurants use your wares, right?
Exactly.
All right. Well, I'm a fan. I like the products. We're going to be using them at Contra Bar, you know, when we open up, hopefully, you know, in the next month or so. The company is GlassVan, glass.van, G-L-1-S, G-L-A. .vin. Go get you some glasses, David. Thank you for coming on. David Kong from GlassVan. This is Cooking Issues.